Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The U.S. is updating plans for a non-nuclear strike to cripple Iran's alleged nuclear weapons program if international diplomacy fails, Pentagon sources have confirmed. Strategists are understood to have prepared two options for pinpoint strikes using B-2 bombers flying directly from bases in Missouri, Guam in the Pacific, and Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. The main plan calls for a rolling five-day bombing campaign against 400 key targets in Iran, including 24 nuclear-related sites, 14 military airfields and radar installations, and Revolutionary Guard headquarters. At least 75 targets in underground complexes would be attacked with waves of bunker buster bombs. Iranian radar networks and air defense bases would be struck by submarine-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles and then kept out of action by carrier aircraft flying from warships in the Indian Ocean and Persian Gulf. The alternative to an all-out campaign is a demonstration strike against one or two high-profile targets, such as the Natanz Uranium Enrichment Facility or the hexafluoride gas plant at Isfahan. UK sources say contingency plans have also been drawn up to cope with the inevitable backlash against the Basra garrison in neighboring Iraq. In Duncan, Oklahoma today, 16 people protesting Halliburton Company's environmental record and its role as a military contractor were arrested when they surged toward a building where company shareholders were meeting. One man was accused of vandalism for tearing up a plastic fence holding back protesters, and the rest were accused of trespassing. Those arrested were frisked, handcuffed, and taken to the Stevens County Jail. The Houston-based company said it decided to meet in the southern Oklahoma City, where it was founded, to highlight company operations that remain there. Critics accused it of seeking a friendly and remote location in an attempt to duck protests. The company is the leading employer in Duncan, which is about 80 miles south of Oklahoma City. The Senate voted to build 370 miles of triple-layered fencing along the Mexican border today and clashed over citizenship for millions of men and women who live in the United States without documentation. Amid increasingly emotional debate over election-year immigration legislation, senators voted 83-16 to add fencing and 500 miles of vehicle barriers along the southern border. It marked the first significant victory in 2 days for conservatives seeking to place their stamp on the contentious measure. The prospects were less favorable for their attempts to strip out portions of the legislation that would allow citizenship for millions of undocumented immigrants and create new guest worker programs. Thousands of demonstrators massed a few blocks from the Capitol demanding immigrant rights. According to Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, construction of the barrier would send, quote, a signal that open border days are over, good fences make good neighbors, fences don't make bad neighbors, end quote. According to an interview with Wolf Blitzer, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez recently disclosed that he is unsure how his family came to the United States. When asked, this is how he responded.
It's unclear. It's unclear. And I've looked at this issue, I've talked to our parents about it, and it's just not clear.
There has been no comment on this from George Bush.
This is news on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy, mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Secret documents that allegedly detail the surveillance of AT&T phone lines under the Bush administration's illegal domestic spying program can be used in a lawsuit against the telephone giant, a federal judge ruled Wednesday, but the records will remain sealed. U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker rejected a bid by AT&T Incorporated to return the records that were given to the privacy advocate Electronic Frontier Foundation by a former AT&T technician. But Walker said the records would remain under seal until it can be determined whether they reveal trade secrets. In a town called Blackjack, ironically, subjective morality has taken center stage. The city council there has rejected a measure allowing unmarried couples with multiple children to live together, and the mayor said those who fall into that category could soon face eviction. Olivia Sheltrack and Fondry Loving were denied an occupancy permit after moving into a home in this St. Louis suburb because they have three children and are not married. The town's Planning and Zoning Commission proposed a change in the law, but the measure was rejected Tuesday by the City Council in a 5-3 vote. The current ordinance prohibits more than three people from living together unless they are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. The defeated measure would have changed the definition of a family to include unmarried couples with two or more children. And finally, Donald Rumsfeld is to appear before Congress in the near future to ask for even more money to pay for the wars of choice of the Bush administration. Rumsfeld is expected to ask for $65 billion more dollars to pay the bills of the Bush wars. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Good evening, or good afternoon, or good morning to you, wherever you may be. I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. We like to think of it as your nightly confrontation with the facts. Sort of a Joe Friday approach, just the facts, ma'am. But it's also Wednesday. And being Wednesday, you know, well, you know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn right, it's prayer meeting edition of Head On, in which we spend a good part of the evening looking at the lunacy and the hatefulness and the sometimes just delightful silliness of the religion industry and the right-wing knuckle-breathing, that's interesting. I think that's because I caught a few minutes of Bull Durham on rerun on TV as I was walking through the living room. And there was you'll have to learn to breathe through your eyelids like the iguanas of the volcanic islands. You know the bit. Knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing religion industry. And I've got plenty of that, but I want to start with something different tonight, this afternoon, today. I want to start, please, no groaning. I want to start with a poem. And it's not just any poem. It's a Robert Frost poem. It's called Mending Wall. And there's a purpose to this. There's a point to this. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I've come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean. No one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves, and some so nearly balls we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There, where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I'm apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But there are no cows. Before I built the wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. By now, I'm sure you know why I shared that poem with you. Because the dumbest man in the United States Senate, namely the less than honorable Jeff Sessions, junior senator of Alabama, repeated that phrase again and again and again and again and again and again and again today in debate on the floor of the United States Senate. And my primary purpose in sharing that poem with you, Robert Frost is most likely my favorite poet. Well, Carl Sandburg, E.E. Cummings, kind of a holy trinity of American poets, as it were. The reason I share that with you is because, much like the idiots who have T-shirts and run around saying, "Well, Shakespeare said, first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers." And Shakespeare did indeed write those words, and he put those words in the mouth of a man who sought to be a dictator over England. Just as Robert Frost put the phrase, good fences make good neighbors, in the mouth of a fool in this poem. What Jeff Sessions did today was display his absolute and utter lack of education, his absolute and utter lack of perception, his absolute and utter lack of ever having read this daggum poem. And you know what? I expect engineers to be good with numbers and equations and figuring out technical stuff. I expect electricians to know how to keep me from frying my family every time I try to change a light bulb. I expect a senator to be a learned man or a learned woman. You know, I have differences with Robert Byrd, but this much is true. When that man stands up and quotes something, you understand that he knew the context. That doofus, Jeff Sessions, that godless, soulless, motherless, brainless Republican displayed, you know, what's the old saying? Better to be silent and thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it. Man, Jeff Sessions proved it today. Yes, Lord, yes, he proved it today. And that, you know, that line, those lines. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only, and the shade of trees. That is Jeff Sessions. He moves in darkness. because all of this was about spending a boatload of your money on a fool's errand, building a fence across the entire southern border of the United States of America. Millions upon hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion, to build a fence. You know, a dual fence with some killing ground between fence one and fence two, just like they had in the Stalags. Something there is doesn't love a wall. Freedom doesn't love a wall. I'd ask to know, before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Oh, yeah, for those of you who think I'm so dead wrong on this immigration issue, this fraud, you better ask yourself before you say that wall's a good idea. Who are they walling in and walling out? Oh, yeah. We're going to keep them Mexicans coming to America, God's country. But who are they walling in? You are who they are walling in. Better vamoose it for the Pecos. Ain't no more vamoosing once they get the wall up. They've shut the door on Fortress America. Mm-mm. You're as stuck in as they are stuck out. Think about it. Good fences make good neighbors. Really, no. No, they don't. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. Jeff Sessions moves in darkness, as it seems to me. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is Head On. Head On Radio.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding. Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
For whom hearing a song like that just makes them blood in their eyes. Blows my mind. Bending wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. Something there is. Someone there is. Doesn't love Jeff Sessions. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is going to be poetry night. Because I ran across another article, Dick Cheney, border wall important. A physical security barrier in urban areas along the U.S.-Mexican border is an important part of the Bush administration's new border enforcement initiative, Vice President Dick Cheney told Flush Flimball on Tuesday. Asked if the administration had ever considered building an actual wall along the border, Cheney told leading conservative radio host Flush Flimball,
When you get into built-up urban areas, this is... Security barriers might be a better word for it, are in fact an important part of the overall plan and need to be part of it. Paul! Missed him.
The president said that other areas
where you've got vast spaces out there would require other kinds of arrangement. I was thinking maybe a double-barreled 10-gauge buckshot.
These idiots actually want to join the ranks of the greatest fools in the history of the world. They want to join the builders of the Great Wall of China. Visible from space and a monument to the stupidity of mankind. I've mentioned it before. You know what happened. The wall got completed and they bribed the gatekeeper. Here, you take the keys. Come on through the gate. Don't bother climbing the wall. That's the darn fools that we are dealing with here. and the Minute Men. Remember, their wives gave them that nickname. The Minute Men. They say that we have to build the wall before we can talk about arresting people who hire immigrants at slave wages and abuse them. This just blows me. Do they really believe that? I'm trying to get my head around this thing. It is a fake. It's a fake damn issue, okay? This is not a real issue. We would not be talking about this were it not for the fact that this is an election year and the Republicans are done fresh out of gay marriage and John Kerry and Al Gore gonna get your guns and Bibles. And your mama's. And your mama's guns and Bibles. They're fresh out of it. So, it's a fraud. They don't care. The debate. Did you watch some of the debate today? I honest to God, I wish I had Jeff Sessions from today with his good fences make good neighbors. Mealy-mouthed little effete South Alabama snob. You know, if you go all the way back to Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, you find out that even back then, South Alabama didn't much trust North Alabama, and vice versa. There's a reference in To Kill a Mockingbird about how Scout says she didn't know much about North Alabama except that it was full of Union sympathizers and big liquor interests. So, you know, Cheney, well, we have a security barrier. He learned that from the Israelis. You don't call them fences and you don't call them walls. You call them security barriers. But we're only going to have them around the large metropolitan areas. Further out in the desert, they walk on in. It's amazing. It's simply amazing. But he did remind me of another poem. Didn't have a chance to look for it. Edward Arlington Robinson, Miniver Cheevy, child of scorn, cursing the day that he was born. Miniver Cheney, child of scorn. We're cursing the day that he was born. And you did, well, this is only one of a great gaggle of news stories that are out there today. It appears that the bombing plan is officially out. We know what we're going to be doing to the poor working slobs in Iran. And something that may not have made it your way or that didn't make a lot of noise as far as I could tell from my observation of the news. A little Supreme Court decision came down on Monday. I think we ought to talk about it because it lets you know what, you remember those no good mugwump Democrats in the Senate who said,
I believe that John Roberts will be a fair man if he is given the Chief Justiceship of the United States Supreme Court. I believe.
Believe with every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. And it turns out John Roberts isn't quite so fair, Senator. So all of that is up ahead, as are, I trust, your phone calls, if you feel so compelled. Or if there's something you want to, if you feel like I'm missing out on something, jump right in. The phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Workers and unions united for a strong grassroots state legislative campaign in Pennsylvania that elected a pro-working family Democrat in a heavily Republican district. Jim Deegan of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO says the race has political significance beyond this contest.
The significance of that victory is that workers came together. Unions and union members came together, and unions came together there, and they put out an all-out campaign.
Deegan says this state legislative race that sent Andrew Denneman to the Pennsylvania State House is an indication of greater change to come in the state's U.S. Senate race.
We think it is. We think that union members and working families, they're looking for change. And Bob Casey represents that change. He supports working people on health care, on fair trade policies. He supports raising the minimum wage. And these are issues that aren't being talked about in Congress. And this is one way. This particular race shows that working people want these issues addressed. That's what we're going to be doing by sending Bob Casey to the U.S. Senate.
Is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in crisis? The American Federation of Government Employees, a union representing 600,000 workers in the federal government, thinks so and is launching a media campaign this week to inform Americans.
It's not a normal freeze. This breakdown here is to eliminate the agency.
That was Andrea Brooks, AFGE's National Vice President of Women's and Fair Practices, talking about a hiring freeze that has been in place at the agency since 2001. Since that time, the EEOC has lost 20% of its workforce, and the Bush administration is seeking to cut the agency's budget by $4 million. According to Brooks, the backlog of cases at the EEOC will grow to nearly 48,000 in 2007. AFGE members at the Department of Defense are especially concerned, as the administration is implementing new work rules that will take away some of the on-the-job security they have with union representation.
They said, in touting these new work rules, don't worry, you still have the right to go to EEOC. Well, they knew that EEOC was being dismantled from within.
Here is today's economic report. How much does home ownership help as an economic asset for families? According to the Economic Policy Institute, the top 1% own primary homes worth $1.9 trillion, with the bottom 90% of the country owning $11.8 trillion. But what about second homes? They are a far greater source of wealth for the top 1% at $1.1 trillion, and only $0.02 trillion for the bottom 90%.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Alrighty then, thanks for being with us this afternoon, this evening, wherever you are, and thanks for sharing. Through the day, I get a lot of news stories from a lot of people, and I appreciate them being brought to my attention. Some folks apparently really do enjoy our little prayer meeting edition of the program, and I suppose it would be well, prayer meeting edition. Got to do a prayer meeting today now, don't we? You all know what is coming here in the next couple of days, the big premiere of the new Ron Howard film. Opie's Da Vinci Code. No, the Da Vinci Code. Some of you have read it, some of you haven't. Funny about that. I have. Big letdown. And most of this foo-frah surrounding the Da Vinci Code, the only thing it proves is that these jackassed society morons have not read the book. By the way, do you remember Pogo? Remember the comic strip Pogo? That's where that comes from. Walt Kelly, in the midst of the great commie hunt, created an organization for the people who were, you know, the McCarthys, the Roy Cohns, the Richard Nixons out there, and the people who, there's a commie. The Jack Acid Society, JACKACID Society. And it was printed in papers all over the country. It was a great way to call the right wing red baiters of that era what they really were, and get away with it in print on the funny pages of American newspapers all around the country. Jackasses. He just created the Jack Acid Society, and it went very well at the time because it was reminiscent of John Birch, the John Birch Society, no relation to Bruce or Ben. The John Birch Society, the Jack Acid Society. Well, you know, I think we may have to revive Walt Kelly's Jack Acid Society, because apparently Cardinal Francis Arinze, head of the Vatican's Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, this clown who wears lace dresses, he was in the running for the papacy, and he is now Pope Benedict, that old Nazi, again, who wears lace dresses. He's the old Nazi's chief enforcer on matters of the quote-unquote faith. And he says, those who blaspheme Christ and get away with it are exploiting the Christian readiness to forgive and to love even those who insult us. Christians must not just sit back and say it is enough for us to forgive and to forget. Sometimes it is our duty to do something practical. Like what, Cardinal? Burn him at the stake! The Cardinal did not elaborate on the legal measures he suggests, but Rocco Bottiglione, culture minister in the just-ended government of Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, fascist, said the attack on Christianity from the Da Vinci Code would not be tolerated if it were directed against Islam or Judaism. Seems that you can use falsity against Christianity, and there is no high level of social acceptance. Where's the falsity? Prove it! Prove that Yeshua ben Yusuf wasn't married. Prove it. I'm waiting. Baptist, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, Lutheran, Catholic, snake handler, I don't care. Your call's welcome. Prove it. Prove Jesus wasn't married.
Well, it says in 30-second flip-floppians that he wasn't, Bob.
Now, that's what's called hearsay. Prove it. Prove that in a culture where a young Jewish male who by the age of 20 was not married was considered a freak of nature and most often driven from polite society, prove to me, please, that Yeshua ben Yusuf wasn't married. But we got a cardinal out there, Francis Arinze, the enforcer, who wants to use legal means to shut down freedom of expression. It's just a pulp novel, okay? It's not. I mean, I know from great literature. I'm not tooting my trumpet or anything, but for God's sakes, my degree is in English. And I've read a lot of stuff that people said, oh, you must read this. This is great literature. And it turned out to be caca. I mean, if I go the rest of my life and I never read another single piece by Henry James, I mean, I remember, you know, the grade had something to do with reading Henry James, and it was like torment. Oh, for God's sakes, please give me the C- and let me go on and not read Henry James. Oh, God. Just awful. And, you know, there are people out there who have written, like I said, the Da Vinci Code is like, it's a Father Dowling mystery where Father Dowling finds out that he spent his life worshiping a fairy tale. It's fake. A lot of it is fake, but there is, you know, all the art is real. You can go and look at every painting that he references in the book. All the buildings are real. And some of the historical references are real. It is a known fact that Mary Magdalene, for starters, was so feared by the hateful old misogynists, you know, St. Augustine of Hippo, some of those dudes with funny names that are hard to pronounce. They hated women so much, and I can't for the life of me figure this part out. They hated women so much that they had to take a woman who is referred to in the Gospels, Mary Magdalene, who is never referred to as anything other than a follower of Christ. They had to take her and turn her into a whore. Really? Now, that suggests to me that maybe the old Gnostic traditions that suggest that Yeshua ben Yusuf, the Palestinian carpenter, that he was married like everyone would have expected him to be during that time period, that era, that epoch, that culture, maybe there's some truth to it. But you see, Cardinal Francis Arinze is what they like to call a prince of the church. He's a cardinal. Last I heard, he was getting on in years, and they were only using him for pinch hitting and utility infield, you know, the cardinals. Now, this guy's got his entire life wrapped up in this. He's richer than Croesus. He wears only the finest lace dresses and silly-looking shoes. And he's out there saying, you know, thou shalt not read the Da Vinci Code. Silly old fool. I tell you what, we're right on top of a break, Agnes. Yes, you're right, dear. They are fashion nightmares. I think it was our friend Peter in Tallahassee who sent me a link the other day that showed Benedict, that old Nazi, walking around in one of his lace cotillion frocks, with a caption underneath that said, "Pope Benedict, who wears lace dresses and funny looking shoes that even Dorothy wouldn't put on, is worried about the Da Vinci Code making the church look silly." I tell you what, your phone calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Email's easy too, bob@headonradio.com. When we come back, your phone calls. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
During the break, I found, thanks to our friend Peter, you can see the photograph for yourself. It's a blog called Doug's Dynamic Drivel. It is at The Alders, A-L-D-E-R-S, thealders.net/blogs/2006/05/08. I'm guessing thealders.net/blogs will get you to where you can find it. But here's the text. The man on the left, this is a picture of that old Nazi and one of his handlers. Not like that. The man on the left, wearing a fabulous vintage chiffon-lined Dior gold lamé gown over a silk Vera Wang Empire waist tulle cocktail dress, accessorized with a 3-foot beaded peaked House of Whoville hat. That's the one that got me, the House of Whoville. And the ruby slippers Judy Garland wore in The Wizard of Oz, is worried that the Da Vinci Code might make the Roman Catholic Church look foolish. Gorgeous. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello, Bob.
How you doing?
Not too hot.
What's the matter?
Well, you know, these attacks that you're making upon the princes of the church and their clerical garb and things like that, okay, have fun with it if you want to, and you can say that if you wish.
Good, I'm gonna.
But, you know, to half the world's Christians, these people mean something. And, you know, and I think if...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the problem, Jim. To the half the world that's Christian, these people mean more than Christ.
On that basis.
Pardon?
As far as, and I think it's infradignitatum, infradignity, beneath your dignity, to you know, to get into this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't want you to be sounding like Michael Savage. Please,
Jim, I don't suffer fools, and these are fools.
They're not fools. They're people who believe in what they believe. And as far as my personal belief, and I'm not trying to.
Jim, wait a minute, Jim, wait a minute,
please.
Well, no, well, just one second. I want to point out something, because you've got such wonderful historic reference. Jim, please.
I've listened to you for the past 30 minutes.
The guy who is now Pope, for a guy with a historical context, you kind of amaze me, because this guy who is now Pope sat behind a machine gun and shot at American boys in the air during World War II as a Nazi.
The Germans, Bob, they were defending their country as they knew how, and they had to. Now,
he was a member of the Hitler Youth.
So what? this happened. And these people, they were taken into it, and through no fault of their own. They had to be. Read the story of the Hitler Youth and the people who didn't participate. I dare say I would have been a member. You would have probably been a member if you'd been living in Germany at that time. And we can't go back and start throwing stones at these people for things that which they were led into by horrible people as younger people. Now, moving on, I can't understand why can you not refer to Jesus Christ as Jesus Christ instead of Yeshua?
Because it wasn't his name?
I don't understand that, and I just don't understand.
Jim, because it wasn't his name.
You constantly take, and, you know, I just don't understand. I mean, you know, I don't like the Da Vinci Code because I don't believe that Jesus Christ was married. He came to this earth for 3 years, principally, to do a mission, and he was on a mission from his father, okay? And that was to save, he was the Lamb of God, to save the sins of the world. To bear that upon his back, which he did. And that is my core belief, and it always will be.
That's fine, Jim, but you asked me why I refer to him as I do. I refer to him as Yeshua ben Yosef because that was his name.
Well, you know, I think people would prefer, maybe, or understand you more if you would just simply refer to him as Jesus. That's what they know him by. Most of the world that which you're speaking to know him as Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And I just believe, honestly and truly...
Except the Spanish-speaking world in which Jesus is that dude down the block.
That's fine. That is fine. Jesus, Jesus, the same thing. I think you know what we're talking about, and we're just quibbling here. But, you know, it doesn't do a whole lot of good for anybody to start making fun of people because of what they wear in their religion or because of what their backgrounds were over which they had no control of the circumstances. Now, Pope Benedict XVI was not a member of the Alemannia SS. He did not staff a concentration camp. He was a fighting soldier. He was brought up in Nazi Germany, and at least he had the sense enough to turn back to Mother Church away from those doctrines. Now, you got to give him credit for that.
I don't know that he has turned away from those doctrines.
I don't think so. I know the Catholic Church has made a lot of mistakes. Where there is greatness, there is the possibility of great error. However, look, you know, please don't attack the Christian faith because it has been taken advantage of by people like Jerry Falwell and people like that. That's not what Christianity is about, and you know it. And, Bob, look, when you go home tonight, I would ask you to do one thing for me. Get down on your knees and ask God to just guide you and just ask him, what can I do?
Jim, I got to tell you something. I get on my knees to no one.
And friend, I hate to tell you, you are going to be a very lonely man because you deny every instinct that is born in man, and that is to worship a higher being greater than himself. That is innate.
No, it's not. It's not instinctual. Not at all.
We're going to have to, you know, agree to disagree on that.
That's fine. All I'm pointing out, Jim, is that his name wasn't Jesus and his name wasn't Christ. Christ is a Greek word, you know that. Jesus is an anglicization of a Hebrew word.
If this old Nazi Benedict
is holy, then would he not be holy in a three-piece suit instead of a stunning chiffon gown?
See, Bob, that's not right. That's not fair. Now, come on. Listen, fairness is a part of your game. Employ it. He's not an old Nazi. He's not? He was not a participant in the Wannsee Conference. He did not do the things that were done. He was a soldier, and he fought for his country. He was on the wrong side. Well, hell, a lot of people have been on the wrong side. Some of your ancestors were on the wrong side. Some of mine were on the wrong side in the war between the states. And we fought for it. Our ancestors fought to maintain slavery and all kinds of horrible things. You know it, and I know it.
Well, mine didn't, but go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I think you seem to talk about yourself as a son of the South, but that's okay. I've never really been that proud of it. And I had some who were major generals in the Confederate Army. And I don't really look on them with any great love. But I'm just saying, you know, you don't have to do this. I mean, you're too intelligent a man.
So, well, Jim, let's clear this up for just a second. When the Catholic Church, an official, the right-hand man of Benedict, comes out and says that he wants legal action taken against Dan Brown and Ron Howard and all of the people involved with this film, when he says he wants legal action taken against them to suppress their right to express their views, I'm supposed to just leave that lay?
Sure. You can do that to anybody. You can sue anybody. That's their right if they want to do that. I would hate to live in a world where they couldn't.
I can't criticize that.
Well, if you want to, that's fine. And if you want to start making fun of people, Ruby Red Shoes and Judy Garland and going to Oz or whatever, that's fine. But it's just, for some reason, I think it's beneath your dignity. I really do. And that's just that's my modest contribution. I happen to have a lot of respect for Mother Church, okay? Even though
I don't.
I'm not a practicing Roman Catholic, I'm an Anglican. But I still have a great deal of respect for a lot of the faiths it does represent. I still, at least, feel that in my heart.
And well, see, that's the difference between you and me, Jim. You look at the good they do, and I can't see anything but their hateful, blood-soaked history.
Well, you know, that's fine. But
they propagate, as you and I speak, every minute that you and I have spoken, 8 people in Africa have died of AIDS, Jim, and those 8 people have largely died because African Catholics are not allowed to put on a little latex thingy to keep them from getting a disease because the church says they'll go to hell for doing it.
I cannot account for the Vatican's positions on these things. I cannot. I cannot account for that. But can we
account for fools acting like fools?
We are talking about people believing in what they believe in. And unfortunately, you know, whether they're right or wrong, they have the right to believe it, just like you have the right to criticize it. But, I mean, you know, I understand what you're saying. And I am for birth control, particularly when it comes to the prevention of the spreading of a deadly disease for which there is no, you know, cure. Of course. And I have never agreed with that. I guess that's one reason why I am an Anglican or a Protestant. But I still have the respect for them, their right to believe what they believe in. And I hope that one day they will come to their senses. But as far as making fun of their dress and things like that, to me there are a lot of beautiful things about the church. It's music, it's everything about it. Maybe it's the type of religion you were brought up in as opposed to the type of religion I was brought up in. I don't know. But I believe in the basic tenets of Christianity, and I believe in miracles. And I'm not upset because Tony Snow was cured from colon cancer. I'm glad that he was, and I'm glad he was able at least to have somebody at least has insurance. I don't have any problem with that. That doesn't make me angry. There are more important things for me to be worried about. And I just think that, you know, it's just these things are signs of almost a type of bitterness about the inequities of the world. Well, the world is an unfair place. It never was meant to be anything else, I guess, ever since we were cast forth from paradise. Now, was it? And we're going to have to deal with a lot of things. And it's unfortunate the way it is. And I wish I had the answers. And the reason I don't have the answers is because I'm just a finite human being, and I have to have something to cling to that I was given to by my parents, and I thank God they gave it to me. And it's something that I can get on my knees at night and pray to, and it gives me a feeling of comfort and warmth. And I don't say, if you say you don't bend your knees to any man, then I feel sorry for you, Bob, because you're going to, one day you will bend your knees to something or someone. You will. And I really
Well, I'll give you the last word on that, Jim. We've got to hit the break. We've got news coming up. Thanks for your thoughts.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay. Let's do the news. Sorry. You know, I don't bow. I'm human. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The U.S. is updating plans for a non-nuclear strike to cripple Iran's alleged nuclear weapons program if international diplomacy fails, Pentagon sources have confirmed. Strategists are understood to have prepared two options for pinpoint strikes using B-2 bombers flying directly from bases in Missouri, Guam in the Pacific, and Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. The main plan calls for a rolling five-day bombing campaign against 400 key targets in Iran, including 24 nuclear-related sites, 14 military airfields and radar installations, and Revolutionary Guard headquarters. At least 75 targets in underground complexes would be attacked with waves of bunker buster bombs. Iranian radar networks and air defense bases would be struck by submarine-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles and then kept out of action by carrier aircraft flying from warships in the Indian Ocean and Persian Gulf. The alternative to an all-out campaign is a demonstration strike against one or two high-profile targets, such as the Natanz Uranium Enrichment Facility or the hexafluoride gas plant at Isfahan. UK sources say contingency plans have also been drawn up to cope with the inevitable backlash against the Basra garrison in neighboring Iraq. In Duncan, Oklahoma today, 16 people protesting Halliburton Company's environmental record and its role as a military contractor were arrested when they surged toward a building where company shareholders were meeting. One man was accused of vandalism for tearing up a plastic fence holding back protesters, and the rest were accused of trespassing. Those arrested were frisked, handcuffed, and taken to the Stevens County Jail. The Houston-based company said it decided to meet in the southern Oklahoma City, where it was founded, to highlight company operations that remained there. Critics accused it of seeking a friendly and remote location in an attempt to duck protests. The company is the leading employer in Duncan, which is about 80 miles south of Oklahoma City. The Senate voted to build 370 miles of triple-layered fencing along the Mexican border today and clashed over citizenship for millions of men and women who live in the United States without documentation. Amid increasingly emotional debate over election-year immigration legislation, senators voted 83-16 to add fencing and 500 miles of vehicle barriers along the southern border. It marked the first significant victory in 2 days for conservatives seeking to place their stamp on the contentious measure. The prospects were less favorable for their attempts to strip out portions of the legislation that would allow citizenship for millions of undocumented immigrants and create new guest worker programs. Thousands of demonstrators massed a few blocks from the Capitol demanding immigrant rights. According to Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, construction of the barrier would send, quote, a signal that open border days are over, good fences make good neighbors, fences don't make bad neighbors, end quote. According to an interview with Wolf Blitzer, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez recently disclosed that he is unsure how his family came to the United States. When asked, this is how he responded.
It's unclear. It's unclear. And I've looked at this issue, I've talked to our parents about it, and it's just not clear.
There has been no comment on this from George Bush. This is news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Secret documents that allegedly detail the surveillance of AT&T phone lines under the Bush administration's illegal domestic spying program can be used in a lawsuit against the telephone giant, a federal judge ruled Wednesday, but the records will remain sealed. U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker rejected a bid by AT&T Incorporated to return the records that were given to the privacy advocate Electronic Frontier Foundation by a former AT&T technician. But Walker said the records would remain under seal until it can be determined whether they reveal trade secrets. In a town called Blackjack, ironically, subjective morality has taken center stage. The city council there has rejected a measure allowing unmarried couples with multiple children to live together, and the mayor said those who fall into that category could soon face eviction. Olivia Sheltrack and Fondry Loving were denied an occupancy permit after moving into a home in this St. Louis suburb because they have three children and are not married. The town's Planning and Zoning Commission proposed a change in the law, but the measure was rejected Tuesday by the City Council in a 5-3 vote. The current ordinance prohibits more than three people from living together unless they are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. The defeated measure would have changed the definition of a family to include unmarried couples with two or more children. And finally, Donald Rumsfeld is to appear before Congress in the near future to ask for even more money to pay for the wars of choice of the Bush administration. Rumsfeld is expected to ask for $65 billion more dollars to pay the bills of the Bush wars. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes. And I don't want to... You know, I don't want to make anybody else wonder if maybe, you know, I don't want to give anybody nightmares, and I don't want to break anybody's cherished, cherished long-held fantasies or anything like that. But when it comes to, look, this is the 21st century. The days and the time and the era of princes and princesses is gone. That was what the Enlightenment was about. Personal sovereignty. Being beholden to no one and no thing save for your own willingness to participate in civilized society and try to elevate yourself thereby. Blind adherence. Well, first of all, poor stupid Cardinal Arinzi doesn't seem to understand that he has just driven a whole boatload of Roman Catholics straight to the movie theaters. Ron Howard couldn't have asked for better. What? Banned by the Pope's number two man? You know, that's right up there with banned in Boston. But thanks to the folks, and I should mention, if you're listening to this on an archive or a podcast, or listening to this the day after on radiopower.org, feel free to wander by the Head On Radio Network chat room sometime. We have a lot of fun in there, and we're chatting away even as we speak. And so thanks to the kind comments in the room there. A couple of great comments. Napoleon's line: "Religion is the only thing that keeps the poor from killing the rich." Let Bob know, this from our good friend Annette, let Bob know that we're with him on this one. God gave me a frontal lobe to figure stuff out for myself. The age, as I said, of princes and great leaders divinely ordained is over. When we get, you know, when we get to the point where we can try to run the world on purely rational terms, we might begin to make some progress. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Gene has been waiting. Hey, Gene, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob, go ahead and step on the toes.
Oh, okay.
You've got my permission. Look, I don't really want to be critical, but there was one thing that our good friend Jim said that I'm sorry, I got to take exception to. The idea that you shouldn't let Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson define Christianity, bull.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, the Christian church had plenty of time to rein those idiots in, and they didn't. So it's up to us to tell them, look, this is not cool, this is not good, go away. If the church was as godly as it claims to be, whatever denomination it is, then they wouldn't be given a Sunday morning TV show, let alone a university that, and a network. And I it makes me so mad, because it's like, I spent years on my knees. I just got off them. I don't want to go back down.
I understand
anyway,
that.
Yeah, so anyway, that was pretty much really what I got to say. Just for a twist, I admit if you covered this already, because I just got home, it would appear that apparently not only are Christians uptight over the Da Vinci Code, so are the Muslims, in India at least. So there's a little interfaith dialogue there going. Isn't that great?
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey, look at, you know, that's the thing. The fundies are fundies, Gene.
Yeah.
There's fundamentalist Muslims upset about the Da Vinci Code. There's fundamentalist Christians upset about the Da Vinci Code.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you couldn't separate them in a room.
Yeah.
Except for the different clothing. Thanks, Gene.
All right. Bye.
Have a great evening. Bye now. It's bigotry, okay? It's pure and simple bigotry. Look at this. I always think of our good friend David near Nashville, Tennessee, when I see stories like this. This is out of Nashville itself. The Tennessee Baptist Convention is going to sue Belmont University, a Baptist school. The Tennessee Baptist Convention rejected a proposal to end the 55-year relationship with Belmont University, and so now the Tennessee Baptist Convention is going to turn around and sue the school that it didn't want to break away with. Why? No. This has nothing to do with the Da Vinci Code. The school, it's going to add non-Baptists to its governing board of trustees. That's right. They might let a Presbyterian on the board. Pastor Tim McGeehee of Grace Baptist Church in Tullahoma, Tennessee, where they make some darn fine brown liquor by the name of James Dickel. And you've known him as long as I have. You can call him James instead of Jim. He says the school has become progressively more liberal since he graduated from Belmont University 20 years ago. That concerns a lot of us, and we hated to see that. But I think Belmont decided years ago they were going to go into the music business route rather than a Christian Baptist religion route. And he wants the Tennessee Baptist Convention to take the Belmont University officials to court. I just felt like they've done this illegally, and they have been really deceptive. I guess Pastor McGeehee never read that portion from Saul the Tent Maker where he says Christians aren't supposed to be running around suing each other. Well, it's cafeteria Baptist. And, you know, they're a cult, so they're making it up as they go along. The university has been lying to and stealing from the convention, the Tennessee pastor asserts. The educational institution needs to be taken to court and compelled to account for its wrongful actions. It's like somebody coming into your house and saying, I give you $20 for your house, and if you don't take it, then you have no alternative except to sue because I'm taking over your house. Poor little people. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Cossack is on with us from Florida. Hey, Cossack.
Hey.
You're head on.
How you doing?
Hey.
You know, Jim is a nice feller, but I wonder if he's ever heard of the rat line.
Don't know.
You've heard of him, haven't you?
Help me. I have, but I can't place it right now.
Okay, the rat lines were established by the Catholic Church right after World War II to funnel Nazis out of Europe.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, okay, yeah, how they wound up in Bolivia and Argentina and the like.
Yeah, and in California. And
dope.
You know?
Okay, I know what you're. Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
And it just it really burns me up. It burns me up to hear things like, well, you know, there he wasn't really a Nazi. He was just a Hitlerjugend. By definition, that is a Nazi. You had to apply.
Yeah, right. I mean, it wasn't one of those where you were enrolled from birth.
Correct.
You couldn't be a member of the Hitlerjugend unless, your parents were party members?
Correct. Correct. And, amazingly enough, the Hitlerjugend were feared more by our troops than even the SS, because these people were completely insane. They would sit there and keep fighting literally to the last man.
Well, yeah, some of the last photographs of Hitler are of him pinning iron crosses on 12-year-olds, right?
Correct. Correct. And you know, they were known for the fact that they were suicide prone. I mean, they would literally sit there and crawl under a tank with an anti-tank mine and set it off.
Sounds like somebody else we know lately, doesn't it?
Gee, I wonder where we heard this before, you know? And I have my problems with these people. I'm sorry. They wiped out the majority of my family. I cannot sit there and say, well, you done good. No, you didn't. I'm sorry. You know.
And that's the thing, you know, it's like this cat who's a saint now, I guess. Who founded Opus Dei?
Correct.
Can't remember his name offhand. This guy was a darling, literally a darling, of the fascists in Spain.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but there's they're deifying or trying to. I forget what stage they're in. They're trying to make a saint out of this one Croatian creep who personally. There are pictures of him personally murdering civilians in Croatian concentration camps, and they're making him into a saint.
Well, see, that's where I got my problems too. I mean, like I said, that statistic just sends shivers down my spine. In the minute that you and I talk, 8 people die in Africa.
Correct.
And they don't have to.
Nope.
I mean, it's something as simple as teaching safe sex. We have a population explosion in the world today because the church has a stranglehold on illiterate people, and they tell them that they won't go to the happy place when they're dead, even though they suffer in their lives. They won't go to the happy place when they're dead if they have less children.
Right. And we're helping that because we're not allowing the distribution of condoms. U.S. policy.
Right.
Can't allow people to have condoms. My God, they may actually have sex. Well, they're going to have it anyway, guys. Hello.
Well, yeah, and it's not just that. I mean, if you know your history, and you do, mm-hmm. you know that the inventor of the condom was the ancient Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
They existed in Yeshua's time. And if they really, really bothered him, he would have said something about it.
Exactly.
They were readily available.
I don't recall a single word attributed to him where he said anything even approaching that.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. I also don't, you know, I don't recall Yeshua, you know, dictating sexual mores at all.
He said a few things about divorce, and it's pretty well quiet after that. I mean, you know, if you can stand there and look at an angry mob who want to kill a hooker, and tell them that her sins are no worse than theirs and that hers are forgiven, that sounds kind of like an abject approval of prostitution to me.
Exactly. But these people want to burn any and all possible prostitutes at the stake. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's about who they can kill. It's about the other. It's about who they can exclude. It's about a heaven that they're going to have, and who's not going to be there. You know, I forget who it was that said it to me, but the line went something like, if I go and I wake up after death and I'm looking in the face of Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, I don't know where they think they are, but I know I'll know I'm in hell.
Exactly. Or like you were stating yesterday about or day before about Samuel Clemens. Yeah. Gee, there's going to be working people in heaven. Oh my God. Even some black people. Oh my God.
And I love the way he spells Eskimo, Esquimaux. There'll even be some Eskimo.
Mm-hmm.
But we shall have to forego the Society of Reverend Talmadge. And I don't have time enough for that. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I heard this, and I think this is kind of a cute joke. What happens if the rapture happens? What happens to all of these adulterated Christian women? Are there breast implants going to be left behind, or do they take them with them?
Or, you know, there's the whole, or, you know, what if you've got a non-Christian kidney? That's going to hurt on the way up.
Yep, that's going to be left behind.
I don't know. Then, I mean, you know, this is the kind of thing that real hardcore doctrinology and theology is made of, isn't it? This is, this is the kind of real scholarship you get of theologians who decide how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. You know what we need some real theological scholarship on whether or not heathen kidneys go with Christian bodies.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, while you're down here, you're not. Most people aren't going to be stupid enough to ask, "Does that come from a white person?"
No, because we saw that MASH episode with the iodine, and the dude wakes up. Yeah.
You know. Oh my God! You know, if you're dying, trust me, you're not going to ask questions. It's just gimme, gimme, gimme.
You know, we will all learn that lesson someday, perhaps. Well, no perhaps about it.
I just can't wrap my head around the fact that most people are as much the knuckle draggers that they actually turn out to be. It depresses me. You would think that as a race we would have smartened up somewhere along the way.
Yeah, but that's the problem, and I brought it up a couple of nights ago. It only takes a couple of generations for us to forget everything that we've learned, everything we've been taught. I mean, and the example that I use most frequently, my grandmothers and my grandfathers lived their adult lives through the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw what the 12 years of Republican administration did to this country during that time period. And that is why the Republicans had to wait until now to start trying to do it all over again. They had to wait for that generation to die off and for their learning and their knowledge and their experience to be forgotten in order to palm it off on the American people again.
Exactly. I mean, could you imagine what our founding fathers, especially people like Jefferson and Franklin, would be doing right about now?
Trying to find somewhere to form a new country, I'm guessing.
Oh, I think they'd be out there with pitchforks and torches and leading the parade.
Yeah, Franklin would be in Guantanamo. So would Jefferson. Or if they didn't, you know, just, you know, either, you know, decide whether he'd committed suicide or shot trying to escape. Because Jefferson would be out there hollering for the government to be overturned and start over again because this was an obvious failure.
Correct. Well, Jefferson was the one that suggested that we needed a good revolution every 20 years.
Right, and the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of noblemen and tyrants. Wasn't that his, too?
That's his. Yeah.
Now you say that, you get, oh, my God, you know, Agent Fred may be on the door by the time I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say that. You know, we got laws against saying that now.
Mm-hmm. You know, we can't even read what our founding fathers wrote. And heaven help you if you cite the Constitution. People think you're a nut job.
Yeah, right. You know, or say something crazy like Supreme Court justices should actually be qualified to be on the court beyond politics. You know, that, yeah, crazy talk.
Yeah. You know, they actually have to be jurists. I mean, we've had nut jobs on the court before, but.
Yeah, but well, but usually with the nut jobs we've had on the court, we've had you know, six or seven or eight to balance him or her him out.
Correct.
Now the nut jobs are in the majority.
Yeah. Yeah, the real
it's the
real serious cases are in the majority.
These people that just make stuff up along as they go along. One of the things you hear from the conservatives quite frequently is, how do they put it? The Constitution does not apply to people who aren't Americans.
What?
Have you never heard that?
It doesn't say American. It doesn't. Oh, God.
You know, and if you let that just bubble along and wait for the stuff to rise to the top, the next thing you can really get a handle on the Republicanism, because the next thing after that is, well, okay, Mexicans aren't United States citizens, therefore the Constitution doesn't apply to them. Hey, look, they can be slaves.
Exactly.
Because if the Constitution doesn't apply to non-citizens, then the 13th Amendment doesn't apply to non-citizens, does it?
Correct. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean,
and it's but that's a very real thing. Friend of mine has a daughter who was a nurse out in Los Angeles, and she did private duty nursing for a Saudi woman, a Saudi princess. There you go again, a Saudi princess, and she had slaves with her in Los Angeles. Real live, honest to God slaves. We didn't do anything about it. They weren't citizens.
Exactly. And, of course, the American people still can't get it through our heads that, it was this government that broke its own rules and hustled the Saudi royal family and their retainers out of the country before anybody else was allowed to get in the air.
Yeah, and those are facts now. I mean, that's undisputed. And again, it comes back to my principal point. We are beyond a time for respecting people because of the accidents of their birth. We can't discriminate against them for the accident of their birth or the color of their skin. Why should we afford them special treatment because of the accident of their birth?
Good question.
Well, with that, sorry, I didn't mean to babble away so much of your time. We've got to go to the bottom of the hour. It's time for our Cup of Joe report. So good to hear from you.
My pleasure. Nice to be on with you.
Anytime.
All right.
Take care.
You too.
Bye now. And when we come back, more of your phone calls. If you're on hold, please stay that way. We'll come right back to you as soon as we're done with our Cup of Joe report. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Despite how things are going in Iraq, the warmongers are now looking to make war on Iran for reasons even more specious than the ones that got us into Iraq to begin with. Let's be clear. There's no real reason to bomb or invade Iran. They pose no serious threat to us. Whatever the real reasons for doing so, you can be sure they have nothing to do with self-defense. The invasion and occupation of Iraq is already, as I have said before, a clear war crime. Only the political cowardice of the Democratic Party leadership and the propaganda fed to us by the so-called professional media have kept this administration from facing the consequences of their actions. Enough is enough. Should this administration order one bomb to be dropped on Iran, nuclear or otherwise, I call on all patriotic Americans to remove them from office. If Congress won't impeach, they should be removed by force. I call upon the members of the military to remember that their oath is to the Constitution and not to any one president, and to disobey any orders to attack Iran, as they are clearly illegal. And if we can't, I call upon our friends in the European Union, in Japan, and our allies in NATO to come to our rescue as we came to Europe's rescue more than a half century ago. This is the line in the sand we must draw. What's at stake here is the very survival of the human race, as war with Iran would bring us closer to nuclear destruction. As Americans and as human beings, it's not only our right, but our duty to end this. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Halfway through the program, I'm Bob Kincaid, and just something to throw out for you. Is it possible that all this hissy over the Da Vinci Code and whether or not Jesus was married or whether he had a kid or, you know, the need is enough or whatever, is it possible that, as usual, with all these conservative and fundamentalist things, that it hides a lower, dirtier, nastier, more hateful bigotry? Is that possible? And if so, what do you think that uglier, nastier, more hateful bigotry might be? Let's go to the phones. David in Tennessee, whose name I took in vain earlier, must have heard me. Are you there, David?
Well, of course I am. And as far as this Da Vinci Code thing is going, Bob, it's purely a case of anything that that sets in motion thought in any religious person other than the thought processes, processes, as set in motion by their own little cult leaders, ministers, frightens them. They don't want anybody thinking outside their own little parameters. Therefore, if they consider something that is a badly written fiction novel, obviously, easily pointed to as being just an interesting group of what if, I mean, it's no more than sketches on a cocktail napkin. And they are so frightened to death by it, it's because they don't want their little minions thinking at all, except in a way they prescribe.
How very Orwellian.
Well, of course it is. 1984 has been in progress for how many, 22 years now? We just didn't realize it?
It's not a novel anymore.
No, it's not. We're living it every single day. And as far as that goes, let's talk about evolution. You know what? I got this theory. You know, I'm on many potentially crackpot theories I have. Oh, physically, I think we continue to evolve, aided by things, like Flintstone chewables and, Happy Meals and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, some sort of...
Frisbees, Wheat Chex.
Exactly. But mentally, I think in the face of the onslaught of Fox TV, the Republican Party, if we're not relearning our own best lessons. I think mentally we devolve, and we've got to continue to take the hill. How long did it take us to go from the outlook on labor from 1870? How long did it take us to throw that over? What would you say, 1930, where the serious business started being done? What's that?
Yeah, you didn't really get National Labor Act or anything like that until Franklin Roosevelt's second term.
Yeah, those guys that wanted those labor things taken care of, they were just crackpots in the street that were Bolsheviks. And then suddenly, 60, 70 years into that process, wow, some progress was made. And then we had what we enjoyed after that. And we thought it was an accomplishment that was etched in stone, cast in bronze, could not be thrown away. And gee willikers, it could be thrown away. When those first-hand witnesses and participants began to die, the Karl Roves and the Dick Cheneys and the Dick Nixons and all of them, and the Ronald Reagan, said, wait a second, hey, you know, those guys that have that first-hand view, that first, you know, where they put calluses on their hands, making that work and establishing and earning that, when those guys died, their kids don't get it. Their kids are too eager to buy that 55 Chevy or that 70 Plymouth or that big screen TV in 1995, the very first one. They don't remember that. We can do it to them again. And that's what they've begun.
How is it they manage to remember and we're so good at forgetting, David?
Because we're optimistic and we think that accomplishment represents permanency. And they know that if their enemy, which is us, the rest of the population, you know, that top 3% views us, you and I, Jim, Wayne, Ed, we're the enemy. So that top 3% feels like, oh, well, they're resting now. They think that the battle they won is eternal. Well, we know it isn't, because that dark side will not ever, ever let down its desire to push us under the earth or push us so close to the earth we wish we were under it.
Well, that's what they did after Nixon. We've talked about that in the past. We didn't beat that government's, those Republican government sleazebags. We just made them disappear. They went to ground. You know, if you watch the Godfather, they went to the mattresses.
Precisely. Thank you. Beautiful analogy. Completely accurate. Historically well grounded. They were not ferreted out, and it's not our way to execute. They weren't ferreted out and either neutered or killed, or buried. We thought, having defeated them, that they would simply get it. No. Evil doesn't get it. And they own and practice and live with and revel in and draw their power from evil.
Well, that's the point, David. The point that I keep trying to get across is that, you know, we don't have a principled debate. Did you happen to catch, and maybe not, any of John McCain's speech to Mooney University, Falwell University, whatever you want to call it, over the weekend?
It was horrible. It was disgusting. It made my stomach turn over. A man that I thought of as a war hero has now discredited himself completely. It was the most incredible sellout, corruption, malfeasance. Oh, just start stacking up the ugly words.
Well, exactly. The theme, as I understand it, of his speech, I caught it in a rerun on C-SPAN, was something along the lines of, we have to argue amongst ourselves, but we have to remember that we are all Americans and we all have a common goal. You know what, David? That was a lie. That was a real big lie.
It's a huge lie. It's this idea of, you know, and it's perpetuated in something is just horribly pedestrian and every day is this Fox News, this fair and balanced, this idea that, well, you've got to give both sides their due. If someone is telling a great huge lie, I don't think they deserve a chance to say what their great huge lie is. They should be done away with, and that should be that. Once it's been established how evil they are, and he wants to say that, oh, well, we're all family members, and it's just this one big discussion, and you're not the enemy, and I am not your enemy. Well, that's not true. Because in Mr. Falwell's judgment day, Mr. McCain will have a sword up his butt, and he will bleed until he dies, and he will rot in the hell of earth, according to Mr. Falwell, right?
And Mr. Falwell and Mr. Robertson will get to stand there and giggle and say, now bring on the Jews for the real fun.
Precisely. But Mr. McCain, again, the most disgusting sellout I've ever seen. He wants so badly to be president, he will corrupt and throw away any virtue man can possess. He let George Bush and his father, he let the Bush family do things to him a prostitute could not charge enough for to submit herself to, or himself.
And see, David, I do this crystal ball looking down the road thingy. And, you know, I don't charge for it, and I don't claim to do it professionally. But I've got this little notion that where John McCain is concerned, what they're doing with him is they know that they are toast. The Republican Party knows that they're toast, and they're going to let McCain get up there and get his ass kicked so that they will have a chance to run against a one-term Democratic president who will probably, they think, be Hillary. And because if McCain runs for the presidency and wins, that's going to be terribly inconvenient because that's going to mean that Jebby Bush is going to be older than God when he finally gets his shot because, you know how it is with the Republicans, you know, it's a coronation and then you automatically get to run for the second term.
Well, of course.
Jebby won't challenge, you know, Jebby couldn't be a challenger to a Republican in 2012, but he could darn sure be a challenger to a Democratic incumbent.
And it's
does it make sense?
Boy, it makes perfect sense, and I hate it that it does, but it's only going to work if we, progressives, liberals, Democrats, thinking Americans, if we are lazy, if we don't vote in great numbers to overwhelm a corrupt vote-counting system, if we don't do those things, if we don't show up in such numbers that they can't fix it, you know, that will play out. And I've given a lot of thought. I heard from a coworker on Monday what a great thing it was that Al Gore did what he did Saturday night on Saturday Night Live. And I'm not really a television person. I don't spend much time. I don't seek it out. But last night I got to hear that opening bit. I'm going to go find that. I'm going to go get a transcript of that so that I can, you know, pass my finger over the typed line. That was brilliant. And that step nine concept of yours, I have friends that have been saved by being a friend of Bill, and I think you're right on the money.
There's a reason step nine was chosen.
That man's bright enough. If he throws the handlers out of the room, if he tells them to please have an unnatural act with themselves, I'm going to stand up and speak my mind. The most brilliant part of Al Gore's public speaking career happened when he'd grown that beard and he came back after that appointment of W as the president. And he was just on talk shows with no agenda speaking. He was the most approachable, informed, inviting, motivating guy anybody had ever heard. When they handed him something that wasn't quite him and he had to stand up and do a bad soliloquy off of something that was horribly written, he looked like a cigar store Indian. But just him, I'd love to see. I'd love to see the guy begin to craft some sort of campaign. I think it would be a very, very enlightening, enjoyable, and just throw the spinmeisters out. I know for a fact, after some reading and some listening, that the politicians' budget is 20 to 25% of all of that expenditure that we hear about. This election costs so many million dollars. 25% of that goes to people sitting in a room saying, place the ad here and here's what you're supposed to read. And then they go to the club and they have very expensive drinks and they laugh about the politicians listening to them. And tomorrow they...
Well, yeah. And on the Democratic side, David, they do all of that. They get all that money and they lose. And they come back and somebody else hires them again. Mary Beth Cahill is a case in point. Ran John Kerry's campaign straight into the ground. Would not let him come out and fight the Swifties when all they needed to do, all they needed was a righteous slapping upside the head with a ball bat, figuratively speaking.
If some way, somehow, they could have given him, you know, two cups of good old-fashioned Maxwell House coffee, pushed his butt out in front of a camera and said, get after him, they would have been so much better. As opposed to that horse-faced guy, you know, as the vice president of the Slow Speakers Club. Good grief. And now, while I'm really on a roll, I've got to get after you, my good and dear friend, Bob Kincaid.
Oh, no.
Drop the Bill, drop the William, dear friend. That really pretty good whiskey made in Tullahoma, Tennessee.
Yeah, I know. George.
Thank you. You knew it the minute you said it. Okay. I
was just hoping I wouldn't get caught, but, you know.
Oh, you've got much too large an audience to do that.
But it also goes to show you the lack of real intimacy I have with brown liquor, so, you know.
That can be fixed. That can be taken care of, Hoss. Believe me. Let me help you out with that.
Yeah, see, I was thinking it was pure illusion, David. I was halfway between James Beam and, you know, and I know that's heresy, even mentioning that in the same idea in the same idealistic realm as Tennessee whiskey. I know.
Oh, that Beam stuff, that's for flushing radiators.
Exactly, and cleaning needles, you know.
Exactly. Never mind. Let's not go there. But just never mind that. That's not for drinking.
Well, hey, let me pick your brain for just a minute, if you don't mind.
It won't take long.
Because I did take your name in vain earlier. I need the story that we had about the great schism between the Tennessee Baptist Convention and Belmont University there in Nash Vegas. Tell me about Belmont University.
Belmont University, funded by the Baptist Church for decades and decades and decades, and when the Baptists weren't watching, the students and the teachers and the overseers of Belmont University looked around, and once they had established marvelous intra-university relationships with Vanderbilt University, a really solid private school in Nashville, thought, wait a second, you know, there's this thing about music of all sorts in Davidson County, downtown Nashville, Studio B, all the things that have happened here.
Tootsies,
yo. Oh, and I'm standing and saluting as we speak. the side door to the Ryman Auditorium. There was this thing that, wait a second, you know, the nice folks that lived out on West End and Bell Mead that thought the Grand Ole Opry should have never happened, those very intensely rich folks via older methods, old money, need to wise up and say that with publishing, and I'm not even going to try to explain publishing to those that don't know, but publishing creates incredible amounts of money. And there are publishing houses in Nashville, Tennessee, as relates to the protection of and furthering of a written piece of music that make him insane amounts of money. And Belmont said, wait a second, why don't we begin to formalize and codify and really offer an educational outlook on this? And Belmont began to do that. And at that moment, the Baptist, I'm not sure, realized it, but Belmont began to specialize in music as a business entity. Not corrupting necessarily the music side of it, but just letting music, to the best of its ability, coexist with business. So, lo and behold, people from all over the United States started hearing that Belmont University, next door to Vanderbilt, 21 blocks from Tootsie's, was an important creative entity. Well, suddenly there were 22-year-olds, you know, oh gosh, who was she? Oh, there are two or three, and I'm so remiss in not being able to remember their names, but there are very famous country music people that, and popular music people that graduated from Belmont. And as such, they had a worldview. They had a progressive view. They had a view that suddenly didn't quite sync up to Southern Baptist theology. They also had a just two or three bucket loads of finance that would come to that university, not the least of which is a fellow named Mike Curb of Curb Music. And suddenly, you know, they didn't much care what the Baptist Church thought. And highly offended, nose in the air, thumb flipping open the Bible to Second Thessalonians. Oh, we got to get rid of these people. And Belmont couldn't care less. Belmont couldn't care less. And most of Davidson County's going, well, why'd it take you that long? What's the big deal? Please, get out of the way.
Well, see, this is why the whole thing kind of threw me for. I love these stories. I mean, you know that, David. I think this quote from Pastor Tim McGehee about, I think Belmont decided years ago that they were going to go to the music business route rather than a Christian Baptist religion route. And the thing that blows me away out of all this, David, Belmont University offered the Tennessee Baptist Convention $5 million. This is the first time in recorded history I have ever seen a Baptist minister turn down money.
He couldn't take it. You know, it's like, what's that wonderful joke this fellow on the Grand Ole Opry tells? Protestants don't recognize the Pope as their leader, and Jewish folks don't recognize Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and Baptists don't recognize each other at the liquor store. You got it. Yeah, he couldn't.
Until I get the snare drum.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Boom.
No, this just astonishes me. But it turns around. There's a reason they turned down the $5 million.
Yeah, appearances.
Well, no, not just appearances. The Tennessee Baptist Convention wants to sue Belmont for $50 million, namely every last dime the state's Baptists have ever given Belmont.
They're going to lose their Baptist butt. Because that school enjoys so much support from the creative community and the surrounding counties, they are going to look like absolute idiots. Because that campus, the next Yo-Yo Ma will come out of Belmont. The next genuinely talented Rhonda Vincent will come out of Belmont. The next Johnny Hyland, the most stunning guitar player in this town, will come out of Belmont. It's a vigorous, wonderful, creative, and intensely alive community of people, students, teachers, administrators. You know, they can do anything they want, and Belmont can laugh it off legally, financially, and figuratively over a drink on a Friday afternoon.
So if some upstanding conservative, righteous, Bible-believing circuit judge enters judgment against Belmont University for $50 million, no sweat?
He better have a way out of town. He better have a tunnel dug. He's going to have a really tough day, because chances are a guy like that lives in a neighborhood with a musician on one side and a song publisher on the other. Let me tell you a story about the power of the music business in this town. A friend of mine that lived in Portland, Oregon, that was writing songs and performing, and he moved here because somebody said, you know what, your stuff might go there, and you could make an incredible living if you get picked up as a writer. And he came here, and he worked, and he worked, and in a little over 2 years, a singer, a woman very well thought of and very hot at the time, her name was Trisha Yearwood, cut one of his songs. Now, at the rumor that Trisha Yearwood was going to cut one of my pal's songs for an upcoming album, three different banks called him, inviting him to come by for a line of credit to buy a home.
It's that Mr. Drysdale on the phone.
Cha-ching, we have a winner. Get that radio host a toaster. That's what the music business means in this town. If you are perceived as having capability in that regard, the business community takes you seriously. I'm serious.
Well, I find this all very interesting because on the part of the Tennessee Baptist Convention, this is positively medieval. They've gotten out of line with the doctrine of the faith, and they need to be whipped back into shape. And we've got to get that heathen guitar music out of our fine fair institution.
Bob, I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to knowingly, consciously relax. There is one county regarding one topic, and that's the music business. The Baptist Church is making a serious mistake to be beeping with the music business in Davidson County, Tennessee. Everybody at Belfont they've never gotten stamped over this. They already have relaxed.
Well, I hope you'll keep us posted on this because I saw this and I was quite fascinated with it. We're up against the break, David. Thank you for all the many different directions you took us in, and the little Nashville culture lesson never hurts either because it is rather a mecca for the entire nation music wise, and I don't just mean country either.
200 years ago, the founders of the city wanted it to be the Athens of the South. They set out a goal. They wanted it to be the Athens of the South, and that regards creativity, education, and forward-thinking politics, and we hope it hasn't changed. There are those of us that work at it.
Well, keep working, then.
We shall.
Take care, David. Thanks a lot.
Keep it up.
Okay, so that's hour number two. And really, you tell me, some other talk radio program. I'm going to toot my own little damn trumpet for a minute. You tell me some other talk radio, conversation. There is no conversation radio except for what you hear on the Head On Radio Network. You tell me any other program where you're going to hear a conversation like that that hasn't been set up weeks in advance and where the conversation is because someone is an expert. That is the beauty of the Head On Radio Network. It's all experts. It's all you. And me, I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is the Head On Radio Network.
While the streets are filled with laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchants' windows are all bright, the faces of the children and the families hurrying to their homes, as the sky darkens and freezes, we'll be gathering around their hearts and tables, giving thanks for God's graces and the birth of the rebel Jesus.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The U.S. is updating plans for a non-nuclear strike to cripple Iran's alleged nuclear weapons program if international diplomacy fails, Pentagon sources have confirmed. Strategists are understood to have prepared two options for pinpoint strikes using B-2 bombers flying directly from bases in Missouri, Guam in the Pacific, and Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. The main plan calls for a rolling five-day bombing campaign against 400 key targets in Iran, including 24 nuclear-related sites, 14 military airfields and radar installations, and Revolutionary Guard headquarters. At least 75 targets in underground complexes would be attacked with waves of bunker buster bombs. Iranian radar networks and air defense bases would be struck by submarine-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles, and then kept out of action by carrier aircraft flying from warships in the Indian Ocean and Persian Gulf. The alternative to an all-out campaign is a demonstration strike against one or two high-profile targets, such as the Natanz Uranium Enrichment Facility or the hexafluoride gas plant at Isfahan. UK sources say contingency plans have also been drawn up to cope with the inevitable backlash against the Basra garrison in neighboring Iraq. In Duncan, Oklahoma today, 16 people protesting Halliburton Company's environmental record and its role as a military contractor were arrested when they surged toward a building where company shareholders were meeting. One man was accused of vandalism for tearing up a plastic fence holding back protesters, and the rest were accused of trespassing. Those arrested were frisked, handcuffed, and taken to the Stevens County Jail. The Houston-based company said it decided to meet in the southern Oklahoma City, where it was founded, to highlight company operations that remained there. Critics accused it of seeking a friendly and remote location in an attempt to duck protests. The company is the leading employer in Duncan, which is about 80 miles south of Oklahoma City. The Senate voted to build 370 miles of triple-layered fencing along the Mexican border today and clashed over citizenship for millions of men and women who live in the United States without documentation. Amid increasingly emotional debate over election-year immigration legislation, senators voted 83-16 to add fencing and 500 miles of vehicle barriers along the southern border. It marked the first significant victory in 2 days for conservatives seeking to place their stamp on the contentious measure. The prospects were less favorable for their attempts to strip out portions of the legislation that would allow citizenship for millions of undocumented immigrants and create new guest worker programs. Thousands of demonstrators massed a few blocks from the Capitol demanding immigrant rights. According to Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, construction of the barrier would send, quote, a signal that open border days are over, good fences make good neighbors, fences don't make bad neighbors, end quote. According to an interview with Wolf Blitzer, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez recently disclosed that he is unsure how his family came to the United States. When asked, this is how he responded.
It's unclear. It's unclear. And I've looked at this issue, I've talked to our parents about it, and it's just not clear.
There has been no comment on this from George Bush.
This is news on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Secret documents that allegedly detail the surveillance of AT&T phone lines under the Bush administration's illegal domestic spying program can be used in a lawsuit against the telephone giant, a federal judge ruled Wednesday, but the records will remain sealed. U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker rejected a bid by AT&T Incorporated to return the records that were given to the privacy advocate Electronic Frontier Foundation by a former AT&T technician. But Walker said the records would remain under seal until it can be determined whether they reveal trade secrets. In a town called Blackjack, ironically, subjective morality has taken center stage. The city council there has rejected a measure allowing unmarried couples with multiple children to live together, and the mayor said those who fall into that category could soon face eviction. Olivia Sheltrack and Fondry Loving were denied an occupancy permit after moving into a home in this St. Louis suburb because they have three children and are not married. The town's Planning and Zoning Commission proposed a change in the law, but the measure was rejected Tuesday by the City Council in a 5-3 vote. The current ordinance prohibits more than three people from living together unless they are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. The defeated measure would have changed the definition of a family to include unmarried couples with two or more children. And finally, Donald Rumsfeld is to appear before Congress in the near future to ask for even more money to pay for the wars of choice of the Bush administration. Rumsfeld is expected to ask for $65 billion more dollars to pay the bills of the Bush wars. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Any further thoughts for what we do with the rest of this Wednesday prayer meeting edition of Head On? I've got a couple more for you. One of those things has to do with the question that I posed with regard to the Da Vinci Code. Now, you know, if you're not going to go see the movie, if you're not, you know, I apologize, but, you know, it is kind of out there in the culture. And one of the principal missions that I see of this program and our efforts here, in addition to the general notion of the general notion of conversation radio, one of the other missions is to, because so, you know, whether it's big rocks in schools or my wife and I are going to have to get a divorce because two guys just picked out a China pattern. Regardless of all of the or whatever, the purpose here is to point out these frauds and to shine a great big light on them. And one of these frauds has to do with the hue and cry raised by the Da Vinci Code. Okay? And by that I mean that there is, in fact, an underlying deeper bigotry involved in the church, as if it was the only one. Well, let's just call them fundies, because in this particular instance, the Baptists are in bed with the Catholics, who are in bed with this, and then the Muslims are mad, and fundies. Okay, we can put this all under the broad, general, topical heading of fundy bigotry. And what this has to do with is, of course, as it so frequently is with Republicans or fundamentalists, sex. And who has it and how they have it, when they have it, where they have it, whether the lights are on, whether, you know, fur-lined cuffs are used, swinging from the chandeliers at the Marriott Peachtree Plaza in Atlanta, you know. So, bigotry. If you're going to read it, well, I'm not going to give anything away. You've probably figured out a lot of it anyway. I'm not going to give away the ending. I'm not going to give away the plot line. If you haven't read it, this might be food for thought. I don't want you to necessarily go out and buy Mr. Brown's book. He's got enough money to burn a sopping wet elephant as it is. But it is worth thinking about. Because, as I've pointed out In a way, it goes back to the Robert Frost poem that I started the program with. Pointing out that what Jeff Sessions was talking about, good fences make good neighbors. Good fences make good neighbors. That he actually was wrong on a deeper level. And I proved that to you within... of the pen, I mean, hard kind of proof. But, you know, even Robert Frost was making fun of that, good fences make good neighbors. I suppose if I was doing Robert Frost justice, I would be trying to do some sort of a New England accent. But in this particular instance, I had that taken away from me by that proud son of the heart of Dixie, Jeff Sessions. Good fences make good neighbors. Speaking of neighbors, I mean, having that man in the Senate is a lot like having Gomer Pyle in the U.S. Senate. Mealy mouth. Anyway, it's like that. Because when we're talking about the Da Vinci Code, it will come as no surprise to people who are familiar with biblical history. As I mentioned at one point, the Roman Catholic Church absolutely busted its little tuchus to turn Mary Magdalene into a whore. But it was, it was a threat to them, the idea that women might be deserving of some power, because you had to have somebody to beat on, and women were handy. What is it, flip-floppians or something, where you get the wives submit to your husband's crap. And some more of that Saul the tent maker garbage about women. Let not thy hair be a distraction unto the minister in church, that. And the general stupidity about women, if thou hast a question about thy sermon that thou hast just heard with thine ears, shut thou thy mouth until thou dost get home, and then ask thou of thy husband to explain it to thy stupid little mind. The history of the rise of Christianity is largely a history of the oppressed, help, help, I'm being repressed, bloody peasant. It's a history of repression of women. And it is a history of repression of all things feminine. And to that end, the Da Vinci Code spends a lot of time talking about provable things with regard to Leonardo da Vinci and his arguably pagan representations of the feminine divine. Or if you want to go with something a little more 20th century, the feminine mystique. Betty Friedan, right? Yeah. The feminine mystique. And the fact that human beings exist in a duality in which masculinity is not worth a damn without femininity, nor is femininity much good without masculinity. The relationship is symbiotic. So that being the case, it's worth noting that inside that book, there are also references to, shall we say, sexual ambiguity. And there's your hidden bigotry. There's mention of all manner of sexuality, and that, not whether or not Mary Magdalene married Yeshua ben Yusuf Bethlehem or Nazareth, but that. Sexual experimentation, sexuality outside of that which is approved by the religion industry, that is the hidden bigotry within the Da Vinci Code. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on. Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay. You?
I'm doing great, man. Good show.
Thank you.
Listen, I got a question for you before I get to my point.
Okay.
How pissed off are you going to be when you find out Halliburton gets the contract to build the fence?
Oh, well, you know, I've got a little bit of hair left, and, you know, hopefully there will be somebody to pin my arms behind my back to keep me from ripping it out, but, yeah.
I figured that one about $2 or $3 million a mile away, I figured.
Yeah, on a cost-plus contract, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's if everything goes okay. If there's
interference
or things like that, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, the occasional cost overrun. Well, did you see where Halliburton had their little stockholder meeting today?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, and they tried to sneak away from where they said they were going to have it and have it in a double-secret probation location, and the protesters found out and left their free speech zone, and they had to be attacked by the police.
Oh, no. Where was that at?
Somewhere in these United States. I'm offhand, I can't think of the exact location. But yeah, those cotton picking, doggone, confounded, commie pinko leftist Maoist protesters left. They left the reservation and got out of the free speech zone.
Well, I mean, it couldn't be a very big meeting. They only got like what, 5 or 6 stockholders. Let me see: Bush, Cheney, Karl Rove. You know.
Yeah, where were they today?
Exactly. I bet they weren't at that meeting. But I bet their stockholders are very happy, I would say. But back to my point.
Okay, please.
You were talking earlier about, you know, and like, I love to listen to this show, man. I mean, you guys are, well, you have so much knowledge and history, and, it just completely amazes me how all that stuff could fit in one head. Because it surely didn't fit in mine.
Sometimes it hurts, Wayne.
Well, it oughta, Bob. You made some comment about how, you know, we forget what our parents taught us or, you know, something to that effect in that.
Yeah.
You know what amazes me is what is never forgotten is the hate. The hate is always carried on. You know, how many wars have been caused by or fought by something that happened 600 years ago or 1,000 years ago?
Look at Kosovo.
But exactly. Which is, you know, my point. My father was Serbian. You know, my mother was, French, Irish, Catholic, you know, a whole bunch of things, you know. And... The Serbs and the Croats, of course, were enemies because the Croatians were Catholic and they sided with Nazi Germany and they murdered Serbs and Serbs murdered Croats and, you know, on.
And everybody killed the Muslims.
Huh?
And everybody killed the Muslims.
And everybody killed the Muslims. And, you know, I had my grandmother died when I was very young and my grandfather remarried. And his new wife, my step-grandmother, his stepfather, didn't talk, her and her two daughters, you know, my, I guess, step-aunts, I don't know what the hell you call them, didn't talk to my mother for 30 years because she was Catholic. And, you know, I mean, I find that completely, I mean, that's half of the damn problems of... Because that's the things people remember. People don't remember the good. They remember the...
Yeah, and that's insane.
It is insane. But that's what's driving a lot of this conflict today. Am I right?
Well, yeah, you are. And the question you pose is, it's probably the stuff that the PhD theses on in psychology and sociology are made out of. Why do we hang on to the hate, but we can't keep track of the good?
Well, exactly, and that's my point. That's my point. The hate is always remembered. And, you know, sometimes I think it'd be a great thing if we could just erase memories and kind of start all over again. You know, I work with a kid that's, kid, because he's half my age, he's a Croatian, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he wanted in the union, came in the union, his last name ended in ICH. Hell, I thought he was a Serb, so I'm going to help him out, and I did. And, you know, finally, after he was working 6 or 8 months and his, whole life changed for the better, because he was making a good living. He had health insurance. He knows that eventually he's going to be able to retire with dignity. He confessed to me that he was Croatian. I told him, what the hell, I still love you. You treated me good. And, you know, and that's what we have to get to. Not what you've done in the past, but how you treat me now. And that's how
people.
Wayne, that's what
America is supposed to be. That's the shining light that America is designed to be.
Well, how are we going to get there? What are we going to
do? Well, I mean, we've been there a couple of times. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a matter of forgetting and learning. And I mean, I pointed out last night on the program that in 1870, in Mark Twain's day, there were signs hanging in windows that said, "No Irish need apply."
Well, exactly.
Well, and you know, and that was in Brahmin, Boston, and the Irish own Boston now.
Right.
I'm speaking broadly.
And I mean, that story has been repeated in every little town in America. When, you know, when my grandfather came here from Serbia, and he had sons, and they went, you know, if your last name ended in ICH at that time, you couldn't get a job in the steel mill. Of course, things turned around, and they became business owners and mayors and things like that. And then lucky for me, when I came around, if your name ended in ICH, you went to the top of the list, which wasn't right either, but, you know, it sure as hell helped me. But,
that's what makes this whole immigration thing such a fraud.
Yes, it does. This is,
ICH couldn't get a job because the people with SKI had all the jobs.
Exactly. You know, what this immigration issue has done is replaced welfare. You know, another red herring. You know, while everybody was concerned about somebody getting something for nothing, the government was ripping us all off because you were too concerned about the guy next door got cheese and you didn't. And now it's the same thing with this immigration issue. You know, these people have been here for how long, and now all of a sudden it's a big damn problem.
Well, Alberto Gonzalez, that nasty little attorney general, Alberto Gonzalez confessed on TV a couple of days ago that when his grandparents came to the United States, he wasn't even sure if they came legally.
Yeah, and he's even talked to his parents, and they don't know either. It's a very confusing issue, you know. I'll tell you how they got here. They crawled under a fence. That's how they got here.
Swam a river.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it certainly has been good for him, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has. So.
But see, that's the whole Republican thing, Wayne. It's about climate. You know, Democrats put the ladder up, okay? And we let the Alberto Gonzalez climb the ladder, and we let the Clarence Thomases climb the ladder, and the ladder is there because of Democratic policies. And the Alberto Gonzalez's and the Clarence Thomases get to the top of the ladder, and every rung they go up, they are stomping
everybody else.
Yeah, they're stomping the hands underneath them.
Exactly. Exactly. So, anyway, that's my little spiel for tonight.
Well, I appreciate it because it's the opposite side of the coin, and it really is something to put real skull sweat into. Why we hang on to the hate but we can't remember the good? Maybe it's because there's somebody out there, and I'm not talking about the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers or the Gettys or the Illuminati or the Bohemian Grove bunch, but someone out there, generally people in power, are hell-bent on making sure that you and I and people like us spend our time and our energy hating the other while we're being made mockery of by the people above us.
That's exactly right. We're so busy hating each other, we're not watching what they're doing to us. And, you know, we got to smarten up and, wise up to what they're doing. And change this thing. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, Brother Jim, that man brings some good arguments to the table. And there's one good thing about Jim. Jim doesn't get mad and go away. J- Jim keeps coming back and presenting his side, and that's admirable, and that's what this thing is all about. That's what conversation radio is. And I know there are certain people that have got mad at you, so they're not going to call anymore or listen anymore. Well, I think that's foolish. If you have an argument and it's a valid argument, bring it to the table, man. That's what.
Well, you know, again, it's not an echo chamber. You want echo chamber? There's hundreds of hours a day of right wing radio echo chamber.
Yes, there is, and you don't get to make your argument on those stations. So
right,
you know, I mean, Rush Limbaugh cuts you off and pretends like he's still talking to you, and that doesn't happen here. So kudos to Jim, and I hope he keeps doing it.
All right. Thanks, well, Wayne.
Bye, man.
Bye now. Well, there's the homework question. And, of course, if you want the answer to some of why we're so good at hanging on to the hate, I mean, a guy stood in the driveway last week and said, you know, them people, you know, the colors, they'll probably steal your lawnmower. Jesus. But if you want to find out the origins for some of this stuff, I can never recommend highly enough a close and thorough reading of Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. Because if you do read it closely, and if you do pay attention, and, you know, you will. I mean, we're not talking about the Republicans who sit there and read the latest book by Ann Coulter and have to have their mouths, their lips moving while they're reading the page. There's a portion early in A People's History of the United States that talks about the fact that there was a sort of critical mass reached in the early days of the colonies when a great number of African slaves had been imported. And, you know, we've got a prettier word for it. At least when I was in public school, we learned a prettier word for it. We called it indentured servitude. That was white slaves. And there were a bunch of them. And there was a point in time, a point in our early, early history, where there was a possibility that the African slaves and the white slaves were going to come together and stop the slavery BS. And that, therein, in that threat to the landed, gentrified planter culture, therein lie those first few little tiny mustard seeds of the racism and classism that tortures this country to this day. Because the gentry, the landed people, the money people succeeded in making the white slaves feel like somehow they were better than the black slaves. You wonder where people like old Theodore Geisel, you know, Dr. Seuss, you wonder where he got the notion of sneetches? All you got to do is read American history, baby. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves, too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Before they got to that whole, take the entire concert. Evil Woman. I think that was actually written by Pope Paul. Let's go back to the phones. David had another story for us. You still with us, David?
I'm still getting over the Pope writing Evil Woman. Oh, Bob.
You know, well, I have these little inspired moments of lunacy, David.
Please keep having them. You know, and
mostly I'm a straight man.
You know, just blurt them out, would you? Just like come forth with the wisdom, would you, brother? Well,
give me an amen.
Amen, brother. I got this story, and it's 100% true, and I lived it, and I'm living it now. My father, the from that. Son of a Baptist family from East Texas. My mother was very religious, part of a liberal but dedicated Protestant faith in Louisville, Kentucky, and as such, going to public school, she had lots of friends, all right? My East Texas Baptist grandmother is coming to visit, and I'm a little kid. And suddenly, a friend of my mother's from high school comes to visit, and my mother's out of the house for a while. So my mother's friend from high school and my grandmother are in the house for less than 30 minutes. And the upshot of that is, when my father comes home at midday, after doing what he needed to do at work, his mother, my grandmother, is sitting on a packed suitcase as close to the street as she can be at the end of our driveway.
And I love mother, where this is going.
And my mother does not have any idea what's going on. And my dad, my father is saying, "Mama, what the hell's going on?" And to quote my grandmother, as the story was told many times, "I will not be under the roof of your house with that emissary of her pope." It turns out that my mother's closest friend from high school was Catholic. And my East Texas Baptist grandmother made sure she found out that fact. And the upshot of that, the short version of the story, is my father, an hour after said encounter of seeing his mother sitting on a suitcase at the end of the driveway, close to the street, took his mother to the train station in Nashville, Tennessee, paid for a one-way ticket to Dallas, Texas, and there was a lot of letter writing after that. And that was 1949. She would not be in the house. She would not be under the roof with an emissary of the Pope. And by the time I was 10 or 12 years old, the story had been told, and it was kind of like sort of funny. I didn't quite get it. But by 1970, when I was nearly 30 years old, it was funny. And I thought it was way, way, way in the past. And Bob, all of that crap has come around again. That same grandmother would be sitting on that same suitcase on that same driveway in some town right now because of the religious nuts, the Republican Party, and bigotry in general. And it's worldwide. It's endemic. I can't believe it has reared its ugly head. And here it is again for 30-plus years. I could laugh at that story. And right now, by God, I can't.
It ain't funny again.
It ain't funny again. And I'm serious as a heart attack. I see that thought process. I live that rationale. It has somehow come out of the ground. It was dead and buried. Think of the openness of 1970. Well, you were real young. We thought we had gotten something done, and these absolute monsters have drug this crap out of the ground again. I'm sorry. What's next? A rejuvenation?
Well, it's
KKK.
That's where we're going. I mean, what do you think these minute men are? They're the KKK without the linens and percales.
Well, yeah, no sheets, expensive sunglasses, and cheap folding chairs,
lawn furniture, and high powered rifles.
Yep. Much better scopes, much better sighting devices. But
well, you know, they go for the German scopes. What do you want?
Well, Leupold and Stevens, that's made in Hillsboro, Oregon. Those are pretty good ones too. They won't fog up at all.
I was thinking Carl Zeiss.
Well, those are lenses. I'm not sure they really make scopes anymore. But
oh, yes, they do.
Oh, well, I'm sure they're good. Yeah.
Oh, they're very good.
A little background of photography. If it's got that C on it, it's a damn fine piece of glass. All right, let's quit laughing. It's serious business. We have regressed.
Yeah,
again.
And it's because, like I said earlier, you know, they went to ground. They didn't go away. You know, we ran Nixon out of office, but we didn't do anything. You know, figuratively speaking, we ran Nixon out of office, but we let Cheney and Rumsfeld, who were sitting there, they were the precious little children of the administration. I mean, they were babies. They were in their late 20s, early 30s, and you know, we didn't do anything, but we let them go to Paraguay.
Yeah, we let the handmaidens fly. Oh, gosh, I know about 17-year locusts, but what about 32-year slime? I guess.
Well, and that's the thing. In 2001, they take office, and Dick Cheney stands up, I'm back.
Oh, God, don't do that. It's too accurate. Oh.
Close enough to be disturbing, isn't it?
It's disturbing knowing the man's alive, let alone he's got his... got his power and whatever else. I'm sorry, he's bionic, you know. You know, four or five of those little things inside, a couple of extra batteries. Who knows what I'm serious, you know, I said once before, a couple of extra batteries. I bet he could cut a fine figure as a breakdancer, but, oh. The fact that he hasn't died yet, I think it's pure tribute to it.
Well, after the conversation we had a few weeks back, I can never look at Dick Cheney again and not think about me hiding behind my father's easy chair, shaking my belt buckle to change the channels on his new Zenith.
Oh, I know.
You know, and it just makes me want to get close enough to Dick Cheney to shake my belt buckle at him.
Oh, yeah, change a couple of frequencies. Watch a few of those sine waves. Do something for him.
Hey, Dick, come here. Look at my new microwave.
Oh, exactly. Need an extra battery? I got a couple here in the, you know, second drawer to the left. But seriously, the evil that is this routine about this religiosity, this industry that are these guys, and occasionally, because it's one of the channels I get with an antenna, I look at Trinity Broadcasting, and they have... This past Saturday, starting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they had this two-hour broadcast that they repeated three times about this guy railing about the evils of the Da Vinci Code. And it really is. It's anti-feminine. It's anti-anything that makes sense for modern America. They want so badly to cause their own to stamp out any question that doesn't give the answer they have prescribed in their $30 free donation tapes and DVDs.
Prayer hanky.
You got it. Oh, it's
wedded on personally by the Reverend. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Touched by him who knows him the best. Well,
and even him's lawyers who's preparing the suit papers for Belmont University.
Yeah, exactly. Even though those hideous secular humanists are giving the Belmont University Endowment Fund five times more money than the Baptist Church would even think of, it's not working out for them in downtown Nashville. And you know, I am so thankful that the county of my birth is acting so sensibly and turning its back on all that sort of stuff. Because what's his name? The Reverend Dick Land, oh, that Southern Baptist of great renown. Oh, you've spoken about him a time or two. Oh, Bob, are you there? Oh, well, gee whiz, I don't hear the Bob. I'm just going to babble until somebody comes back on.
Oh, Bob's still there, I'm sure.
Oh, good. Well, I hope I'm not, because I'm not making any sense.
Well, it's not babbling.
Oh, good.
It's talking.
Now, having heard this before, I know that I should respond cogently and talk to the great radio mistress, Agnes, that she is. And wait for Bob. Wait for the dial tone for Bob to come back. Oh, Oh, geez, didn't hear. Am I?
No, I'm still listening.
Well, I just
I thought there was going to be more.
Well, I just didn't want to keep going. I didn't want to talk over Bob. But
oh no, that's fine. Everything's just fine. But he gives me my shot every once in a while because I've been told that I'm so very quiet behind the mic.
I'm sure he's just checking.
Well, does this mean you and I are radio hosts now?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, Liz, this is my moment to shine, and I don't have any notes in front of me, and I'm always just like the counterpuncher playing off of Bob. Geez, Willikers.
Yeah, but you know what's sad? I have to go to break.
Well, let's do that.
He always catches me as, you know, as we're going to break, so.
Well, let's let the break happen, and by that time, I'm sure somebody that matters will be back on the air.
Okay, honey. Thanks for calling.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're against the break, so we'll be back here in just a few minutes with Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenu oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
About that, you know, one of the beautiful things about not being beholden to advertisers, never buy an Acer computer, okay? Well, you know, what would the show have been without what, at least, you know, one gremlin? Tell you what, let's pretend that didn't happen. I have my sincere apologies to our good friend David. So many good points made and then just... let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bruce Birch is with us. He has been following up on... you remember us talking about the Greensboro 7, the people who were surveilled and harassed by the police in Greensboro for protesting the... president's... the resident's State of the Union address. Was that it, Bruce?
Yes, it was. January 31st, there was a huge nighttime protest, which is actually something that never happens because it's actually against the law in Greensboro to have a parade after dark. I think that goes back to 1960, the same year that there was the Greensboro sit-ins that sparked the sit-in movement across the South. That's an aside. But there was, we had a huge protest. I think about 250 people showed up, and at the close of this protest, or I should say this demonstration, march, whatever you want to call it, seven people were arrested for standing in front of cars and blocking what they didn't know it at the time, but what turned out to be a police officer from spying on cars, or recording people's license tags onto a video camera. And just recently, over the last couple of weeks, the last of the cases were disposed of, and apparently all of them have entered into an agreement for a deferred prosecution, meaning that they were charged with various crimes such as carrying a concealed weapon and assault on a police officer, the fist of the guy got really hurt, and
very, you hate it when that happens.
Yeah, various charges, but they've all apparently at this point are all resolved, and the deferred prosecution meaning that if they keep their nose clean for a certain amount of time, the charges go completely away. So we are counting that as a win in Greensboro against the domestic spying machine that seems to have been created over the last few years by the Bush administration. Along with that, I wanted to also give an update on, let it be heard here first on the Head On Radio Network that the ACLU has gotten involved in demanding that the Greensboro Police Department disclose the entire contents of their surveillance of that night, including anything that they sent on to state or federal authorities, and that has just broken as of today. So there, this may be a flashpoint in the war on our civil liberties, Bob. I just wanted to sort of get that into the show tonight and let everybody know that that's going on. You know, that there are people who are standing up and saying no more.
Well, that's about damn time for starters.
Well,
second, I mean, I'm not talking about what you guys were doing. I'm talking about a few volleys are crossing the bow of the administration. You had that story in the top of the hour news about what happened out in California with the AT&T suit. And that entails a guy who was an executive at AT&T and said he saw it happen, that the NSA had their own little secure locked away room where they could do anything they wanted.
Yep. And that and all of the trunk lines were routed through that room.
Yeah, exactly. So with all the trunk lines routed through the room, that makes it plausible for people like Bell South and Verizon to come out and say, we never gave up any phone records. Well, hell no, you didn't give up any phone records. You just let the NSA gather them themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. So
what's that phrase that the government's so fond of? Plausible deniability?
Yes. And I'm going to say this here, Bob. I really believe, honestly, that as with any other movement that's been of any consequence in this nation, the war against our civil liberties has to be fought at a grassroots level. I believe city to city, community to community, and not at trying to combat it at the federal level. I mean, just because of the fact that if we can get our police departments to agree to not spy on us, I mean, they're the ones who are doing it. It's not the Homeland Security folks. These are our police departments who are being given this equipment. And maybe, you know, maybe I need to take this to another night. But just the bottom line is that, you know, it's going to take a lot of work. And based on everything that I was apprised of tonight, that there's some folks here who are in it for the long haul. So, you know, looking forward to some more news from Greensboro about what's happening in this effort.
Well, keep the fire burning, will you, please? I appreciate the information. Hopefully, maybe we can go into this in a little greater depth tomorrow evening.
Well, we'll see what we can do. But okay. I just want to get that to you, Bob, and thanks for all you're doing, man.
Thank you. Thank you sincerely, Bruce. And we will talk about this some more tomorrow. And please pass on my congratulations and my my slap on the back for the Greensboro 7 down there standing up.
Right on.
All right. Take care.
I'm out. Bye.
Bye. All right. My admiration. That's the word I was at. Thanks, everyone, for all your participation in the show. Thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for your input. Thanks most of all for your time. The one thing you have that is more precious than anything else. Thank you. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers is our IT guy. There, I guess that's the formal term, isn't it? He's the IT guy. The show happens every night and is brought to you because thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up and they build the American dream every day. And by supporting the growth of the Head On Radio Network, they're saving the American dream as well. And always, 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 RMR, all for you.